It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Well, it's a special morning. It's a warm morning and a warm day here in the greater Austin and Central Texas area. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower. On the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, we're local and digital on the Horn app and in hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're with you up till noon, and at the noon hour, it is Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. So glad to be with you there. I look through the glass and I see, well, actually, I'm looking at the back of Rod Babers, which is impressive in his, you know, in his musculature. But what I started to say was, if I look beyond him, I can just see the top of Jeff Howell's Golden Dome. And Jeff will be joining us. They're putting the finishing touches on a brand new edition of the Blitz podcast. So that'll be coming your way tomorrow evening, and he'll be joining us here momentarily. So Jeff will be alongside. Meanwhile, our guy at the switch, our producer, our man behind the glass, the purveyor of all good things, Flex ATX, Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. How'd your weekend go, Snoop?
It went good.
You okay?
It went good, yeah. I'm just having tech glitches on a Monday. I wear my money. It was a good weekend.
Yeah, it was a very, very, very busy weekend.
And I really enjoyed being a Texas baseball fan this weekend, Craig.
Were you able to work that in with everything else you had going on with the UIL State Baseball Tournament and was it the SQT going on at Westlake? Had a lot of that stuff going on, so there was a lot happening there. So it looks like you got a lot happening back
dentist
there.
Dentist appointments and, oh, God, I'm sorry, Craig. I got this.
We had the reason why, if you wondered why, and the Colonel, Craig Flowers, is probably wondering, what in the heck, why did they take extra time before jumping in? We had this special little montage, highlight montage of the Super Regional to open the program with today, but there were a couple of technical glitches, and Snoop was trying to get those to fall in line. They didn't fall in line this hour, but we're going to open the next hour of the program with it. So just a little bit of a review of that. So no worries. We're all good. We know how the games turned out. We know that the Texas Longhorns are headed for the College World Series for the 37th time, and that's 12 more than any other program in NCAA history. They did win the Super Regional last night, winning 12-4 after they had won Game 1 on Saturday night. Dramatic fashion. Didn't look like they were going to need the dramatic fashion. They were up 3-0 going to the ninth. Tanner Witt, who had come out of the bullpen with two outs in the seventh inning, looked really sharp through the seventh and eighth, going to the ninth, and you had leadoff home run, then an out, then you had a walk, then you had out number two, and then you had a two-run homer on a three-ball, two-strike pitch when they were one strike away from winning it. So that tied the score, and then they go to the bottom of the ninth, and there were two quick outs. It looked like for sure this thing was headed not only to extra innings, but that all the momentum would then be with South Florida. But with two outs, Silas Ardwan was able to reach first base. He hit kind of an in-between hop chopper that their shortstop came charging in on, bobbled, couldn't control it, And it turned out to be an error, and it set the stage for Eric Kennedy to hit that deep drive to dead center right over the head of Antonio Pena, the center fielder for South Florida, and that allowed Arduino to score the game-winning run. So they won it in dramatic walk-off fashion on Saturday night, and then there was very little drama last night. South Florida did jump to a 2-0 lead in the first inning. Remember, they were the designated home team last night in Game 2, the way they flip it in NCAA tournament play. And the Longhorns came right back with a 4-spot in the top of the second. They tacked on 2 more, and after it was cut to 6-3, they added single runs to make it 8-3. And then Cam Williams got a big home run after it was 8-4 to put it, pretty much put it out of reach. So Longhorns did finish it off. They are now 47-15. They are 32 games above 500. The worst they can finish the season. Like if they just go up to Omaha and they lose 2 games and they're done, the old 2 and barbecue thing. The worst they can do is finish 30 games above 500 now. So that's says a lot about what this team's been able to accomplish. But, of course, they have bigger and better things on their mind than just finishing 30 above 500. They now know they're in the national tournament, as Augie Garrido liked to call it, with an opportunity to win the school's 7th national championship. So it will begin for them this weekend. It could be, it could be as early as Saturday, but I believe, and Keith Moreland and I talked about this on the broadcast last night, if you go by the way that it has been set up in the past, you have to go back 2 years because of no College World Series last year. But if you go back a couple of years and then look at the past history of the event, of course, the way it's set up, it's bracketed on both sides. There's 2 different brackets. You win your bracket championship, and then the 2 bracket winners meet for the national title in a best-of-3 series. And the way they do it, they stagger it so that one of the brackets begins on Saturday, the other bracket begins on Sunday. And given the fact that the Texas side of the bracket still is not yet complete, there are 2 more games, 2 more if-necessary games to be played today. Logic would tell you that the Longhorns are going to play on Sunday, that their first game in Omaha would be Sunday. Television logic would tell you there's probably a decent chance it would be Sunday night because the matchups are going to be Tennessee against either Dallas Baptist or Virginia and then Texas against either Notre Dame or Mississippi State. So probably the ESPN family of networks, which televises the college series, might value putting a Texas matchup on in prime time, especially if it's against Notre Dame, but also against Mississippi State. So I'd say an educated guess might be that they would play Sunday night on that. But we'll find out. All of that stuff will be released tomorrow because they still have games to be. It could be released as early as later tonight. It could be. There's a game that will start at noon. The Dallas Baptist-Virginia game will start at noon today in Columbia, South Carolina. That's in that, you know, neutral site deal, which if you didn't hear about that, the way that that whole thing worked was because of COVID protocols this year, the NCAA took its 20 approved regional sites, which they then whittled it down to 16, but they took those 20 and determined that for not only the regionals, but for the super regionals, those would be the only places where they could host regional or super regional action. So if you either didn't submit a bid or submitted a bid but weren't selected as one of the 20, you could not play at home no matter where you were seated. And that's exactly what happened with Dallas Baptist and Virginia. And both went in as 3 seeds. And so it meant it had to be one of the 2 places where they won their regionals, either in Fort Worth or in Columbia. And Keith Moreland, who worked the Fort Worth Regional, told us on the air the other night, TCU had no interest in hosting a neutral site Super Regional. Since they weren't involved with it, they had no interest in doing it. Didn't want to staff it, didn't want to work it. It didn't happen. Columbia, South Carolina, where South Carolina had been knocked out, was interested in doing it. So that's why they had it there. And I think they put it up on the graphics or on the telecast yesterday and maybe also on Saturday that Virginia is 363 miles, University of Virginia, which is in Charlottesville, is 363 miles away from Columbia. Dallas Baptist is 1,007 miles away, but still neutral, and they've split the first two games. DBU rallied from down 5-2 to win the first game, 6-5, and they had to wait out a long rain delay in the ninth inning. And then yesterday, it was scoreless going into the eighth, the bottom of the eighth inning, where Virginia was the designated home team, and they scored four in the bottom of the eighth and won it 4-0. So those two have one more game to be played. It'll be in Columbia, South Carolina today. And the winner will be playing Tennessee. This is on the Texas side of the bracket. Tennessee, very impressive in sweeping LSU and ending the coaching career of Paul Menary. They won the first game more competitively, blew out the Tigers yesterday 15-6. So they've swept through and won their two games. And Texas is waiting on the winner of the regional in Starkville, Mississippi, between Mississippi State and Notre Dame. Mississippi State came from behind, won the first game 9-8 on Saturday. Notre Dame blew out the Bulldogs at Duty Noble Field in Starkville to win 9-1. And so they've split, and they're going to play at 6 o'clock tonight, 6 o'clock this evening. And that's why you'll hear in this upcoming interview, this visit with David Pierce, when I ask him about hanging out on the couch and watching it, because that's what he said when they won the regional. He was going to watch all the, if necessary, games last Monday. So I asked him a similar question. You'll hear about that in a moment. And the winner of that, obviously, will play Texas. The other side of the bracket is all set. It's ready to go. The biggest story there, the number one overall seed in the tournament, the team that's been number one ranked almost the entire season, the team that was probably universally described as being clearly the best team in the entire tournament, the best team in the nation, Arkansas, will not be in the College World Series. The Razorbacks wiped out NC State on Friday 21-2, jumped to a 2-0 lead in Game 2 on Saturday, but the Wolfpack came back and they won that game 6-5. And then yesterday, it was a really intriguing move made by Dave Van Horn, the head coach for Arkansas. He elected to start Kevin Copps, his outstanding pitcher who had not started a game all year long, but had 12 wins, 10 saves, no losses, and he was brilliant, basically, for eight innings given his workload. He had thrown 185 pitches the prior weekend in the regional, getting two wins and a save. Starting his first game of the year, he threw over 100 pitches. He'd given up two runs, but Arkansas had fought back, tied it at two, and so they go to the top of the ninth. I was surprised he came out for the top of the ninth, but he did and yielded a leadoff home run. Wound up throwing 118 pitches and took his first and only loss of the season. And North Carolina State got the win, 3-2. So a stunner there. And they're going to play Stanford. Stanford shocked a lot of people. Not so much that they beat Texas Tech in the weekend. I think it was kind of eyebrow-raising that they were able to do it in Lubbock on that hot Friday afternoon and that hot Saturday afternoon with temperatures over 100 degrees. But that they went in and just summarily blew out the Red Raiders. That Tech was never in it. That I think was surprising and obviously disappointing to a lot of Tech fans and those of the Big 12 as well. But the Cardinal, the 9 seed, beat the 8 seed Tech and beat them 15-3 on Friday and 9-0 on Saturday. So that end of the season. I think Tim Tadlock did a fine job to get Tech to that point, given all the injuries the Red Raiders had. I think he did a really good coaching job. But they got shorthanded, and he made the decision a few weeks ago to pull Micah Dallas out of the starting rotation using the bullpen. It was kind of creating one need by trying to address another, and I don't know that that always ended up working out. It made them a little vulnerable in their starting pitching, and it came home to roost, so to speak, in the Super Regional. But nevertheless, he did a good job to get Tech to that point where they were a national seed. So Stanford wins there, and they're playing North Carolina State. I don't think anybody had that matchup at Stanford and NC State. The other thing was chalk, the 4 seed and the 5 seed advance. Vanderbilt, the last team to win a College World Series. I don't know if you call them, quote-unquote, defending national champions because they couldn't defend it last year because there was no tournament, but they were the last team to win it. They won it in 2019. They won in two straight. They swept their two games from East Carolina, and they're playing the 5 seed Arizona. Arizona knew it was going to be quite a battle with the 12 seed Ole Miss, And Arizona won the opener Friday 9-3. You talk about haymaker after haymaker, blow and counter blow. Arizona wins 9-3 on Friday. Ole Miss wins 12-3 on Saturday night. And then last night, Arizona blew out Ole Miss 16-3 to win that super region. So the 4-5 matchup held there. As far as Texas goes, like I said, they know they're going to play one or the other. Either Mississippi State or Notre Dame. After the game last night, we had a couple of conversations. First of all, with Zach Zubia, who has been an integral part of the Longhorn success. This is a guy who played, one of three guys on that roster who played in the College World Series the last time they went in 2018. Austin Todd, of course, out with a season-ending shoulder injury. DJ Petrinsky was the starting catcher for them. He's the backup catcher to Silas Ardwine. And was, by the way, a really good moment last night to see DJ get an opportunity to come up to bat in the ninth inning. And the fans gave him a standing ovation and asked for a curtain call. And just solid and a leader and all of those great things you want from a student athlete, sixth-year senior who's been through the wars with it. And then the other is Zubia, who was a DH back in the day, and of course now he's come so far as a first baseman, and who, in his final at-bat last night, extended his streak of reaching base safely to 38 consecutive games. He'd gone 0-for-4 and came up with an RBI single in the top of the ninth in his last opportunity. So that was the first question I asked him when Keith Moreland and I were visiting with Zach Zubia after the game. Zub, first thing I got to ask is, how good did it feel to get that base hit there and it extend that on-base streak to 38 in a row?
I mean, you know, we were just out here having a good time today. I wasn't really worried about it. I just wanted to come out and help my team win, whatever I had to do. It was a rough start out there, but, you know, finished strong. So that was all I was worried about, was just next at-bat, every single at-bat.
You've been asked, everybody's been asked so much about how it flipped, how you guys turned it around after the 0-3 start. I know it seems like a lifetime ago, but when you look at the 30,000-foot view of it all, what you guys did, what stands out as much as anything to you about how things turned around?
I mean, I think it just shows the dedication of this team's work ethic and this team's mentality and this team's fierceness. I mean, everything we do is with intent. Everything we do is with teamwork and camaraderie. And, you know, I just can't thank enough to the team, the coaches, the fans. They've been nothing but great all year. And, you know, we're not done yet. That's the biggest thing now, is that we're not done yet. And we got to go win some more games out there in Omaha.
Zach, one of the things I want to talk about, I'm glad you're saying what you're saying about you're not done yet, because the fun's just fixing to start if you can go win some ball games. But talk to us about that last one right here and just seeing some of the other guys that you've been here with. You go back to Austin, who wasn't able to finish the year. Your time here, DJ's time here, Tristan's time here. I can see Ty's time here. I can see how y'all looked at. Have y'all got together and talked about it?
I mean, not really. I mean, we just kind of gone at it one day at a time, and you know, we've just focused on, you know, the keeping our heads down and just working hard and not really trying to focus on the big picture. You know, I'm sure we'll get together tonight and to look at it and go, hey, look at what we've done. But you know, like I said, we're not done yet. I mean, we've had everybody step up this year, and it's been nothing but great team chemistry, great team camaraderie, and you know, I'm just so happy for these guys, and they get to experience this.
When we were in Oklahoma City, I asked you, what did you remember about your Big 12 experience in 18? And you said it was quick. Same thing with Omaha as well. I know you're looking forward to having a longer trip and a longer experience this time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. We can't go tuning a barbecue up there this time. This team's ready. This team's ready to roll. You know, we've been playing in a great environment with some great fans this week, and, you know, ready to get back on the road and do it all over again.
Final thing here, Zach. What did it mean to play in front of this full house this weekend, one final opportunity?
I mean, I wish Longhorn Nation's listening to me right now. Y'all are the best. Y'all came up and showed out today, and I just cannot thank y'all enough. The team cannot thank y'all enough for the endless support. Y'all make a factor in every single game that we play in, and thank you so much, Longhorn Nation, and I hope you know that it's from the bottom of my heart when I say that.
Thank you as well, Zach. Hey, we'll see you in Omaha.
Hey, see you in Omaha. Hook them horns, baby.
Yeah, there was Zach Zubia, his thoughts about it. And then head coach David Pierce came over. And of course, when the game ended, and of course the team was excited and huddled around one another, and they took a team picture and those things on the field. And Dave was going around and thanking a lot of the fans. And Susan's wife comes over, and they share a little kiss through the screen, the foul screen, which was kind of cool. And then went around and did all that. So we had an opportunity to visit with Coach Pierce and get his thoughts reflecting on how all of this unfolded for his team.
Down on the field. David, let me get your thoughts. What's going through your mind? What was going through your mind there in the ninth inning?
Well, I mean, just kind of the whole thing coming together. I mean, just watching our players just continue to just play hard, and man, I'm just so pumped for them. I mean, you know how we started. It was tough. They just put their head down, just keep working, and I don't know. I'm kind of speechless.
But, David, you know, when you say you're speechless, but the one great thing about it, you look at it is, I mean, your platform, what you establish and your demeanor sort of let them get through that early part, you know, of it is what it is, and then you keep going forward. And by the time you got to conference play, you started to get the guys in the right spots. You could almost feel it, and your lineup started to come together.
Yeah, that's true. I appreciate you saying that. I mean, it's been – me, everybody, we're all just kind of a piece of this whole of the whole here, and every guy has just done a tremendous job, from our staff to our support staff. I mean, what about Tulo? What about Sean Allen, man? I mean, bringing Tulo in and then moving Sean over to the pitching, and did a hell of a job. And then you look at Phillip Miller, he's just such a rock. I mean, I'm just so proud of those guys. They get an opportunity to go celebrate with this team and go compete for a national championship, and I'm pumped up for the whole group.
David, I asked you earlier today in the pregame about your 4, 5, and 6 hitters who had gone 0-for-12 yesterday, and you said just stay on time, stay on time. It looked like they did that. Ivan was able to get a knock there. Cam, what a night he had with the walks and then the big home run. And then Dougie also coming through for you.
Yeah, I mean, they did a nice job, really. Nobody's down on Ivan. He's not seeing the ball as well, but I was really proud of Peyton, too, coming off the bench and getting a big hit at the time where, I mean, we needed some separation right there. I thought he did a great job, but that group, I mean, watching Cam take 4 walks and then hit one over the center field wall, man, that's big time and big time power. But I'm looking at him right now. I'm just so proud of this whole group.
Well, David, I asked you a week ago tonight if you were going to watch what was going to happen with the regionals wrapping up Monday, and you said, yeah, I'm going to be on the couch. I'm going to watch all the if-necessary stuff. So I know there's a game in Starkville that's going to have your attention, an if-necessary game tomorrow night.
I don't know if anything's going to have my attention tomorrow, I'll be honest with you. I mean, we're fortunate we don't have to play the third one, but, I'll keep up. We'll pay attention and just kind of relax and watch it and then gather our information and go compete.
Here's the most obvious question in the world. Does everybody get a day off tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. That's the only time that they get fired up in the huddle.
Final thing here. Was it difficult to kiss Susan through the screen?
Well, she likes doing that. I don't understand it, but she wants it, and that's what we do.
Okay.
And it's always, it's always with a picture, too. Look, this team is great, man. It's just – like right now, I'm just looking around and just watching our players sign autographs and just the fans sticking around. It's after midnight. I mean, this is awesome. I'm so proud of our fan base and everybody here.
David, we appreciate it. Congratulations. Enjoy it. And look forward to being all together up in Omaha.
That's right. Hook 'em horns. Thank you.
All right. There it is, the postgame conversation with David Pierce. A couple of texts on the Specs text line at 337-3776. Somebody pleased with the call last night was listening from Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, as I am now. Nice. Appreciate that. Also, somebody said, my wife dropped me off and came to pick me up from the game Saturday night. I texted her in the eighth inning, told her to come pick me up. Then USF tied it up. I texted her to wait. She was not happy. 5 minutes later, the Horns not only won the game but kept my wife having to drive around downtown Austin waiting for the game to end, perfectly timed win. So understand that. And local Longhorn Lift says, I love how this team answered every score of USF this weekend. Talk about crushing every bit of confidence each time the Bulls started feeling good. Great teams find ways to make things like that happen. And how about them stolen bases? Yeah, Mike Antigua with 39 stolen bases. Somebody else said, I'm sick about my Hogs and agree why bringing Copps back out for the ninth, pitching injuries to Pallett, that's Peyton Pallett, and Bolden had the Hogs in a bad spot, would have hindered them in Omaha, but after the season they had, I really want them to get to Omaha. I think it was stunning to everybody, even with the injuries, they thought they'd be there. And he added, I've been saying for weeks now, to bookend, that Texas is the team to beat with the pitching and speed. They're going to be hard to beat. So there was all of that, and then somebody else texted and said, Texas has not been tested in the regional or super regional. Will that hurt them in this College World Series? Bullpen is very rested, though, compared to some other teams. Shocked about Arkansas, impressed with the NC State pitching. That was a big thing. And then somebody else said UT has been gifted the absolute easiest path to Omaha. TSU, it was Southern, not TSU, Fairview, it was Fairfield. And Arizona State, USF, we're all meek opponents. Please quit pushing this team like they're world beaters. Without free passes, this team's offense is mediocre at best. Well, they're batting .281 as a team. They have drawn over 400 free passes, so I think that also suggests good hitting. If you have a good batter's eye, and you'll take what the opponent is going to give you. I think there's that. And then the one thing I think that you're discounting to the texter, you didn't even mention anything about how they have a 2.89 team ERA. Far and away the best in the nation. They play great defense. I know folks really fixate on the offense, and I get that. But if you can pitch and play defense in that ballpark, TD Ameritrade, which is a pitching and defensive-centered ballpark, it's not a homer-friendly ballpark, then you got a shot. I'm not saying they're world beaters. I didn't even say they're going to win the national championship. What I am saying is they're definitely one of the top eight teams in the country. They're the highest remaining seed. And that was built on what they did in the regular season, not in the regional and the super regional, what they did there. So they're in Omaha, you know, if you don't like Texas, and that's okay, but you'll have to deal with that. They're in Omaha. Let's see how they do when they start up there. Okay, coming up, Jeff Howell will join us. Also, Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor on the gigantic recruiting weekend for football and basketball for Texas. We'll get to that coming up. We have Inconceivable, and we will have Snoop Promises. We're going to have that little montage for you to open the 11 o'clock hour. So we'll have that and more coming up Monday edition of Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming. We're live, local, and digital, and viewable by those of you watching. This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Greg Wade, Jeff Howe with you. We're with you all the way up to the noon hour. That last text that I read.
I'm here, by the way. It's good to be on the show today.
I started to say, I'm getting ready to give you the regular setup intro. Let me do that first, and then I'm going to read this thing, and then we're going to get to our special guest. Obviously, fresh, with a fresh coat of paint on the brand new edition of the Blitz podcast. The
pride of Northwest, paint a coat.
Indeed. The pride of Northwest Williamson County, proud graduate of Florence High School and former all-district offensive lineman of Florence Buffaloes. You know him best for his outstanding work at Orange 24/7, Jeff Howe.
Once again, it's work. I don't know if it's outstanding, it's work, but it's there.
It stands out. That last text I read before the break, where I said, where the texter said UT has been gifted the absolute easiest path to Omaha is TSU. It was really Southern, not Texas Southern. Fairview, it was Fairfield, not Fairview. But it's okay. Arizona State, USF.
Oh, for two.
We're all Meek opponents. Meek, by the way, is spelled M-E-E-K, not M-E-A-K.
Jeez.
Please quit pushing this team like they're world beaters without free passes. This team's offense is mediocre at best. So, after that, so there's several people who responded. Somebody said, sounded like a bitter Aggie SEC fan. Texas took care of business the way they should have. Unlike Arky, blame Florida for choking. Our man CB says, was that Texter ripped Texas an Aggie or Razorback fan? Somebody else said, somebody said, cannot overlook how the heat and sweat seem to affect the opposing pitchers. Many pitchers got wild when trying to dry their hands. That is true. A Longhorn fan in Denton says, sounds like that Texter was an Aggie. Boy, but, and then Victor said, like I said, haters are going to hate. CSU Rams fan said, is it UT's fault that Florida and Miami couldn't make it out of the regional? So a lot of folks are responding to that. Somebody else said, UT's great pitching and defense will give them the advantage in Omaha. Thanks for a great call last night.
I hope that wasn't a Texas fan who texted that. Like, can you just enjoy a trip to Omaha for five freaking minutes? God,
it's okay. It's all right. Just like I said,
we have a ham and cheese sandwich and smile a little bit. Good Lord.
So it is the considered opinion from the other texters who responded that that was not a Texas fan.
Let's get the mic. Let's talk about good stuff.
Let's do that. Indeed. It's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
I need my interstitial right there. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Massive recruiting weekend for Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns, and here to break it all down as he does with us each and every Monday. The Stampede is posted at Horns 24/7. He is the recruiting editor at Horns 24/7, Mike Roach. Mike, did you get a little downtime last night?
A little bit, I suppose. it's we're not sleeping these days. So yeah. I think I was up till 1:30 or so polishing the Stampede. So.
No doubt. Late night for everybody involved. Uh-huh. Considering I don't know what time I left the dish, I lost count. But Mike, let's go ahead and let's start. We can go a number of different ways for visit weekend. Let's start with this. We knew Texas was a legitimate contender for Arch Manning going into his unofficial visit this weekend. You've gathered intel. We've got intel posted at Horns 24/7 from Steve Wiltfong, who's plugged into this recruitment. Where is this thing coming out of the visit compared to where it was going in?
I think everything remains on track. So, you know, when I went out to see Arch about a month ago, it was, you know, have they done enough right now to put themselves in a good place in phase one? And I think they had. And then phase two is getting him on campus and seeing where things are after that. I think that you're never going to hear too much excitement from Arch's camp on anything because they're pretty measured. But if you just watched, I mean, you could tell they got the first-class treatment the entire time we saw them interacting on campus. And I think that, you know, it helps that they're growing close with a few other families involved in the process, including Reuben Owens' family. And, you know, those guys are talking. So I think for them, it makes a lot of sense when you look at what they're probably looking for in a college football experience. You're talking about, you know, a nice city that they can live in if they choose to move to be close to Arch. You're talking about a big brand, college football. You're talking about somebody that can, you know, do a lot for that name, but you know, they're going to be focused on the football part of it. And so I think they have really bought in on Steve Sarkisian's vision for it. They do really like their relationship with AJ Milwee. Terry Joseph has a lot of involvement there. I was told, you know, just coming out of the weekend that everybody was pretty excited about the way things went and, you know, Texas should be considered a permanent fixture in this recruitment.
Mike, would it be safe to say, given everything I saw, that it was an A-lister kind of weekend at UFC Dish Fog Field? I ran into Sam Ehlinger in the bathroom. That's weird how I said that, but just did. We were that's right. In talking and seeing all the big names there and a lot of things that were tweeted out over the weekend with Vince Young and Earl Campbell and Ricky Williams and so many of the exalted names in Texas Longhorn football history, it was all part of a very big pull out all stops type of thing, not only for Arch Manning, for everybody in football and even basketball recruiting this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was calculated for a reason. It was, you know, Austin was kind of the place to be on with the baseball stuff, the football visits, the basketball visits. You know, they kind of took the national spotlight. And I talked about it last week. I can't remember if we talked about it on this show. I talk in so many different forums that I forget where I say things. But, I talked about last week, people like kind of losing their minds over other schools having these huge weekends. And that's just kind of how the summer goes. And I said, look, man, Texas is going to have their weekends where they're the center stage. And this was certainly it. For Texas, the biggest thing I got out of the weekend was a lot of people talking about the older guys who had come back and have voiced a lot of vocal support for Sark, a lot of those older players. It seemed like that family environment was really back. And so that was one of the big takeaways I had from everything.
Yeah, Mike, I want to piggyback on that. One of your, and again, I'm not going to give away everything in the Stampede. You can get over at Horns 24/7 and check it out. But you got one section in there just labeled "The Vibe is Different," and a lot of those legends coming back into the program. Matthew McConaughey was around this weekend. A lot of that was part of it, but it just, I don't know, Mike, recruits, it's been a while since I've seen recruits talk about the vibe feeling different like some of them expressed to you over the weekend.
Yeah, it wasn't only recruits, it was parents, it was coaches. There were a ton of people on campus who had been to Texas in the last couple of years with other kids. And so they've experienced things in those, with those staffs. And, that was kind of the prevailing sentiment, was that just the energy was a lot different. And look, a lot of that is we're still in the honeymoon phase of this thing. I don't want to, be a damper on anybody, but I can remember feeling the same way, thinking the same things during Tom Herman's first summer. And then, whatever happens on the field in the fall really depends on how that energy continues to go forward. But right now, the energy is as good as it's been in a long time. And, they've just got to build on it. I think that they've done a lot to create a great foundation for a lot of these kids. They've just really got to build on it and show those results in the fall.
Mike, the other part of the Stampede that I don't read the Stampede. I Michael save it on the back end, so I do read it before everybody else gets it, but not by much. But one thing that I was really fascinated about, and I've been wondering how Texas was going to attack this, the name, image, and likeness conversation, it seems like Sark and this staff have a pretty good handle on how they're going to attack it.
Yeah, so last 2 weeks I've gotten a lot of stuff on the name, image, likeness pitch. So we've had it's been a central part of the Stampede both weeks, but the first week we kind of learned how they're going to use it with the company they've contracted with, Open Doors, which is, is kind of an app for accepting and being a middleman for promotional opportunities for athletes. And then this week it was kind of more about, I've heard that a lot of kids were talking about how much that Texas wants to be able to educate them on the process of the NIL rules, and also, just generally money, money saving and how to invest and things like that. So, it seems like they're taking a pretty 360 approach to the deal, which I think for parents is probably refreshing it seems like a thing that could go left on you pretty easily. And, being able to say, we're going to try to teach this responsibly, I think resonates pretty well.
So, Mike, it's kind of a big exhale now after this weekend. Set up this coming week, and since we're now in the midst of the whirlwind, so to speak, the maelstrom of all of the visits coming on, what does this week look like going forward?
I think, weirdly enough, next week is going to be the busiest week for me. Just because, they're not going to have the number of unofficial visitors, but it'll be the most official visitors they've hosted. A number of their commits will be on campus next week for their official visits, including Malik Murphy. They'll have some massive official visitors as well, like C.J. Williams from California, a wide receiver they're in on, and then Denver Harris, the five-star corner from North Shore, will be in. I mean, it's kind of a who's who of their official targets next week. So, yeah, I'm interested to see kind of what the buzz is coming out of that weekend. That means I'm going to probably spend most of Father's Day on the phone, you know, just chasing down kids. But, yeah, I think, you know, I think for the most part, there's a little fatigue on just about everybody's part. I think that we're fatigued and the coaches are certainly fatigued. So we'll see. We'll see what comes of it.
Mike, we've gotten this far into our segment today. We haven't even talked. There's so much stuff. We haven't even talked about the commitment Texas picked up this weekend, getting Anthony Jones, an athlete out of a two-way player out of Las Vegas. And, Mike, this is a recruitment, as you spelled it out on the site. Man, Pete Kwiatkowski did a heck of a job selling this kid on his future on defense. And we talked about it, that hybrid outside linebacker, those edge positions, that was a need area, a big target area for the staff in recruiting. And it sounds like Anthony Jones is going to fill one of those spots down the road.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, and just seeing him walk around on campus briefly, you know, Saturday, that's an NFL body. I mean, he's just, that's the type of guy PK has really developed in the past to be, you know, high draft picks. So, you know, he's been telling everybody he wanted to be a tight end. And, you know, PK has now convinced him twice because he had him committed at Washington as well to play defense, that was the best thing for his future. So, yeah, I think for Texas, finding those edge guys, those big, long, athletic edge bodies, it was obviously a priority coming into the year, and so they're one down there, and you know, can maybe start to really figure out, you know, how that picture shapes up clearly.
6'5", 242 on Anthony Jones, if you need it.
Good, good size there. All right, hey Mike, we appreciate you taking the time, and we'll look forward again. I'd like you said, I know it's the real busy week coming up for you, but I know that kept you busy. Do you have time to grab a nap today, or you're flicked on now and can't lay down until late tonight?
Yeah, we're kind of on. My wife's been out of town this weekend too, so I've got to go pick her up from the airport. And you guys know how it is when the wife's out of town. I got to clean the house too.
Well done, well done.
So, well, yeah. I'm in right now.
Okay. Hey, Mike. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to it again next Monday.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Roach, recruiting at Horns 24/7. All right, up next, Inconceivable here on Light the Tower on the Horn.
When people think metal, some people think
Greg Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel. Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable always means that it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics. If you're interested in finding out not only about the treatment of sports-related issues, but also the prevention of same, check them out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. Okay, got a couple of animal-related stories, because you know I am with that.
Meth, death, and animal attacks, Craig. That's our three pillars.
Well, I do have an animal attack. Before we get to that, did you notice the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show was this weekend? Normally, it's in February. You know, they've moved it because of COVID.
Mm.
So I'm a big fan of the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show.
You know, here's why I learned to not like that thing, because back when I was younger, it used to preempt Monday Night Raw on the USA Network, so not a big fan of the dog show.
How'd you like to be preempted by that? That's a Pekingese, and that's what won it. It looks like a dust mop, but there it is. The Pekingese, Wasabi was his name. Wasabi won Best in Show.
I'll take my dog. I'll take my two labs over any of those dogs.
Okay, all right. So just wanted to let you know that. Now, you mentioned animal attacks. Yes. We do have an animal attack. This is a little bit weird. Not weird where it happened, in Alaska. Not weird that it happened to people in the out-of-doors in bears. But two campers were injured after being attacked by a bear while they were sleeping in a tent on a camping trip in Alaska. Unidentified victims were camping on Kenai National Wildlife Refuge at the mouth of Hidden Creek on the shore of Skilak Lake. At the time of the incident, it happened Saturday. Following the attack, the campers got away They hopped in a kayak and went to another campground. They were assisted by other campers. Officials said the campers were taken to local hospitals. No details released about the severity of the injuries. So the wildlife refuge there from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, they were at the campsite. They were retrieving gear and conducting an investigation, which I think is weird. It's a freaking bear that attacked people. How investigative do you need to be on this deal?
This is the time on Light the Tower, Craig, where I like to remind the listening audience that the only person I've ever known who's staved off a bear attack and done it with force. Inconceivable. So Bo Jackson once killed a bear, shot it with a pistol at point-blank range.
He did do that. That's right.
He did. That's part of that legend of Bo Jackson. He once legitimately killed a bear. Not with his bare hands, but near.
The wildlife refuge stated, quote, no bears were found in the area, and signs left at the site were inconclusive. They found a collapsed tent and other camping gear. Alaska Department of Fish and Game is conducting a DNA analysis on items collected in an attempt to identify the species of bear involved.
Well, that means he's smarter than the average bear, Craig. He was wise enough to cover up the evidence.
Exactly. It said a public information officer said it is unknown what type of bear was involved or what caused the attack. It was a short, quick, in-your-tent attack, they said. So they're trying to... Yeah. So it almost sounds like the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is not believing the story that there was a bear attack. So... They're conducting an investigation.
Do you keep DNA samples on bears?
Wonder about that.
Okay, I guess you can tell bear DNA.
Yeah. Now comes the most unusual attack story. This was in the Cape Cod Times, and it happened just the other day. And in fact, our good friend and our person who makes everything go smoothly for the Longhorn Radio Network from Learfield IMG College, Terry Kelly sent this to me. Happened in Provincetown, Massachusetts, right where Cape Cod curls up at the tip there. Lobster diver Michael Packard, a little before 8 o'clock in the morning this past Friday, he just entered the water.
Didn't he used to do color for CBS College Basketball?
That was him. Yeah, or he was, what's his name?
Billy Packard.
No, that was Billy Packard. This is Packard, like Todd Packard. No, that's Todd Packard, the one from The Office there. His vessel, the J&J, was off Herring Cove Beach, surrounded by a fleet of boats catching striped bass. Water temperature, balmy 60 degrees, striped visibility bass. About 20 feet. Licensed commercial lobster divers, literally, they just plucked the lobsters off the sandy bottom. And Packard dove down Friday morning. He saw school.